You are listening to Intrepid Healthcare's exclusive coverage of the Gulf Coast Hymns Chapter's Fall Conference. Welcome to GC3 Hymns, direct from New Orleans, Louisiana. Our coverage is brought to you by Javion, changing healthcare one prediction at a time. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Joe Lavelle.
All right, good afternoon and welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Todd Schnick, joined by my friend and colleague, Joe Lavelle. Joe, the Mayo Clinic's back in the house. Looking forward to this conversation. Before, though, we get to that chat with our guest, Keith, quick shout out to our sponsor, Javion. What a great partner.
They've been a great partner for now into our second year, Todd. It's a pleasure working with you.
It absolutely is. All right, let's get to it. Say hello to our guest. His name is Keith Toussaint. He's the Executive Director of Collaborative Development with Mayo Clinic. Keith, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
It's great to have you. Thanks for stopping by and joining us and giving us some of your valuable time. Before we get into our conversation, however, do take a few quick seconds, inform the audience a bit about you and your background.
Sure. As mentioned, I'm Executive Director of Collaborative Development at Mayo Clinic. Been in that role for about 3 years now. The role is in our Office of Business Development, and the focus of that office is to identify promising business opportunities that arise out of innovations that occur inside the clinic, typically with our healthcare providers, things like novel care pathways, novel devices, patient engagement approaches. We also have a pretty central role in identifying the most advantageous partnerships, collaborations of all sorts, and as my title implies, that's a major focus of my work. Owing to my educational and professional background, I focus primarily on the information technology space. Before coming to Mayo Clinic, I was the head of business development for storage services at Amazon Web Services in Seattle, and that's the cloud computing part of the business. That's for those who are unclear on that. And for many years, I worked at Microsoft in various product and business development capacities. The last sort of tranche of work at Microsoft was in the Health Solutions Group, so I helped bring Microsoft Health Vault into being, as well as some other enterprise services like Microsoft Amalgam.
Is there an internationally recognized brand that you haven't worked for? Goodness gracious, what an impressive resume there. Keith, I doubt anyone listening to this show is unfamiliar with Mayo Clinic, but do us a favor and share with us the mission and purpose of Mayo Clinic. What's it out there doing for folks?
Well, Mayo Clinic has just completed its 150th year of existence. We had a big celebration of the beginning of the practice of William Worrall Mayo back in 1864. So that longevity is telling. Mayo has, throughout its history, innovated on a wide range of things. The practice now is a multi-site practice. We're an enterprise that has its primary focus or headquarters in Rochester, Minnesota, southeastern Minnesota. We also have a clinic and hospital in the Phoenix area, a clinic in Scottsdale and a hospital in Phoenix. We also have a hospital and clinic in the Jacksonville, Florida. In addition to that, there is a health system that consists of over 90 sites in the upper Midwest, as well as the Mayo Clinic Care Network, which is a group of affiliates that are individual sort of self-owned practices and hospitals, but affiliate with Mayo Clinic through our Mayo Clinic Care Network. We see about 1.5 million visits a year. I believe that's true. I hope that's correct. And organized around the principle of the needs of the patient come first. That's a pretty deeply ingrained approach at Mayo, given that the clinic was really the place where the practice of medicine originated in the 19th century.
Keith, besides being impressed with your background, I'm just fascinated by your role. It just sounds like it must be just fun every day. Walk us through one of your projects that you're working on. Just to give us an example, maybe you can't name the names or the specific technologies, just to give us a sense of the types of technologies and innovations you're using both clinically and technology-wise.
Sure. Probably remiss if I didn't talk about the thing that's been the major focus of my attention over the last year, and that is a novel approach to developing solutions for our surgical practice. There was a multi-year effort developed to create optimal care pathways for surgical patients. And once the clinicians, the practice leaders, arrived at those optimal pathways, it was clear that the technology tools that were at their disposal would not really be optimal in enabling to manage the care of patients and ensuring that every patient got the optimal care as defined by the pathway. So I worked with a number of other organizations inside Mayo and helped to bring forth this novel approach to managing clinical pathways for surgical patients. It's called EASE, is the acronym that was used. There might be another podcast here where the term was mentioned. My colleague and I had traveled here to the Gulf Coast HIMSS to both Tim and I present it. And the effort and level of collaboration necessary to pull that off was pretty massive. Doing so with a number of technology providers that we haven't released a product yet, so I'm not going to name a lot of names, on the utilizing both sort of proprietary as well as open source technologies, as well as taking some techniques that were developed at other academic medical centers to bring all this together. That's one example. That was a pretty long project. Another example that comes to mind immediately is practically on this on the opposite end of the spectrum, a hydration monitoring technology that has been developed by a startup company called Leo Technologies. I'm sure they're okay if we mention it. That has real promise in enabling clinicians to have an accurate assessment of whole body hydration, which is a major factor in a wide range of conditions. The studies tell us that it is the primary reason why colorectal surgeries for patients, for example, are readmitted to the emergency department. Chemotherapy patients, their hydration status is crucial to their success. And we were working with an outside company that developed a novel algorithm to measure that hydration. And we're doing some testing in the coming months. And those tests wind up being promising. That's an area where I'll be spending a lot of my energies in collaborating with that startup, as well as enabling it to be used in clinical settings far and wide.
Yeah, that sounds quite fascinating. Here at GC3 HIMSS, you delivered a presentation this morning. What was the theme in your message?
Well, the theme, I'll start with the theme because you're going to ask me what the title was, and I don't remember what the title was.
Platforms for Healthcare Applications.
Platforms for Healthcare Applications, and I guess that's a good encapsulation. There have been many titles over the time that I've been doing this presentation. So the main theme of the talk was to engage the healthcare arena in a way that argues for the utilization of more modern approaches to developing information technology solutions, to doing so using methods that are commonplace in the what I call the web native world, folks like Google and Facebook, Yahoo, Microsoft, Amazon, but are practically non-existent in the healthcare space. And the premise is that the sort of rapid innovation and capabilities that you find in that the digital first arena is not just by happenstance or by random occurrence. It is because there's a pretty widely adopted set of architectural rules that enables innovation at many levels of the architecture to come from a wide disparate set of sources. And that variety and diversity of technological innovation is what has enabled that sector to accelerate much more quickly than healthcare. And there are certainly impediments. Impediments isn't really the right word. There are certainly some factors in healthcare that need to be accounted for differently than in the sort of web native space and for consumer apps. But the point of the talk was to say that those are readily identifiable and can be ameliorated pretty successfully if we focus our energies on them. Things like having the appropriate level of security and privacy of health data, ensuring that all of the HIPAA privacy and security rules are met, having a kind of auditability and traceability of all actions in the system to ensure that only the right people are getting access to the appropriate data. All those capabilities can be developed using the architecture that is used more widely in other sectors. It's just that the healthcare arena hasn't had the will to drive towards them, and I'm advocating that we do.
Interesting. You seem to be the perfect person to ask this next question. Really big critic of healthcare in terms of interoperability.
Right.
And when I push on that with really big technical experts, they talk about both the benefits and the pitfalls of having standards in healthcare. And, you know, they allow you to communicate quickly, but they also are this impediment to interoperability. What's your perspective on standards as they help or hurt interoperability?
Well, standards are necessary. There's no way to ensure any level of interoperability without having some standards that enable that interoperability to happen with a high degree of fidelity. I think that the challenges are that there are many steps. One, you know, the great thing about standards, and the joke it always is, the great thing about standards is there's so many from which to choose, right? But even more than that, there is a tendency from time to time to utilize standards in ways for which they were not meant. A prime example is, and this audience might be familiar with this, is the use of the HL7 V3 reference information model. For those who are aware of the sort of history of HL7, there was HL7 V2, which was primarily focused on enabling messaging, and I would say at the level of technical interoperability between organizations, doing things like enabling well-defined message groups and segments to be transferred from department to department inside institutions and between institutions. But then HL7 V3 came around, and the natural tendency for the uninformed was to say, well, this is just another messaging format. Well, it's not a messaging format. It's an information model. So if you use an information model for the purpose of messaging, it's a little bit, you know, like using your truck to drive across a chasm. I mean, you're going to need an airplane. So I think that that's the thoughtful use of standards is a bigger problem than the presence of standards themselves. And we've seen that be the case in spades in the work that we've been doing.
All right, two-part question here. So you've issued the call. You're encouraging the industry to take a bold leap forward to catch up with the rest of other business sectors. So question one is, do you think it's being heard? Do you think the industry has turned a corner and is on the right path now? And two, you said something at the top of the show that I found interesting. You said the industry certainly can do so if its leadership makes the right decisions. So I'd be curious to know what you mean by the right decisions. What are those decisions?
Okay. First, I'll start with the first question. The answer to whether it's moving in the right direction, the answer is yes.
Okay, good.
The emphasis on interoperability, especially, you know, in the latter stages of meaningful use and ONC telegraphing its interest or its intent to really drive towards greater interoperability in the next set of regulations, is a heightening degree of urgency for organizations to tackle that problem. And good things are happening. I mean, you're much more emphasis on interoperability. There's a Commonwealth Alliance, you know, from a couple of years ago, that's much more an emphasis on using FHIR among many of the vendors, even the largest vendors. I can't report this as fact, but I heard from a very good source. In fact, a chief medical information officer who's sitting right across from the hallway here, who mentioned that there was a recent announcement today about both Cerner and Epic agreeing to collaborate using the FHIR standard. So all of these are signs and signals that are positive signals. I think that those are really good signals, and more is needed. In order to make the leap, it's non-negotiable to address the architectural limitations in current systems and address them utilizing more modern approaches.
I would think with Mayo Clinic's strategy of really trying not to be the healthcare system for the world, but to get to your expertise to the world,
right. This
would be vitally important in terms of making sure that information can be shared, but not having to purchase all the hospitals to make that happen.
Yeah, it is crucial. In fact, you'll find that our CEO, John Nosworthy, has often repeated the phrase, and I'm paraphrasing here, that knowledge is Mayo Clinic's most scalable asset. And that knowledge, obviously, in this era, is transmitted digitally. And in order for it to be scalable, that means that it needs to be fungible in forms that can be used in lots of different settings. It has to be transmitted with a high degree of fidelity, and that fidelity can only be ensured if the standards are in place to ensure that when we use the term hemoglobin drop in this clinical setting, in the clinical rules, that when it winds up in the target setting, no or very little meaning is lost. And that requires standards, that requires novel approaches to modeling information. And that's certainly a core part of where Mayo sees itself and central to the vision that's been laid out for Mayo Clinic.
I'm going to ask you the same question I asked your colleague yesterday. We all recognize that Mayo Clinic is a leader in this field and a major influencer on the whole market. With that comes great responsibility and an expectation that you will continue to do so going forward. Talk about the internal culture at the Mayo Clinic, about how you guys continue to drive yourselves to be that leader, to be that influencer.
Could you play Tim's answer first?
I'll let you know who does better answering the question.
You know, as I've probably already indicated, this is the first role that I've had inside a healthcare organization. I've worked with healthcare organizations all around the world. Well, they're mostly in the U.S., all around the U.S., and a few smattering of places in other countries. And I can say without reservation, there's no place, if I were sick, I would want to go to Mayo Clinic, period, end of paragraph, end of story. Their ethos around the centrality of the needs of the patient being first is very deeply ingrained. Of course, everyone says it now, but it's been deeply ingrained for a century and a half. the approach to problem solving that is centered around the patient is rare. There used to be a time where Mayo Clinic was the only place where that happened. That is no longer the case. But it's so deeply ingrained in the culture that it's a transformative experience getting care at Mayo Clinic, especially for things that require interaction between really specialized clinicians. And I think that the sort of the collegial approach that is really deeply ingrained in the environment is really amenable to providing value to the broader healthcare arena, which is frankly why the Mayo Clinic Care Network was established, to enable Mayo's model of care to be sort of consumed and understood in a broader setting. So I'm very optimistic, if that's the question you're asking about, you know, where Mayo's place is today and where it sees itself in the future, not only because the values are so deeply ingrained and I think simply right. But it's also, I think it's also the case that the change in the healthcare environment in the U.S., focusing much more on value, for lack of a better way of putting it, plays right into Mayo's hands. And I think there's a bright future for Mayo.
We learned from Tim yesterday about the three shields, practice, education, research, which was new to me. And I had the great fortune of working with Mayo a couple of years ago on the radiology work sharing project.
Okay.
And what was really enlightening and interesting to me was I found Mayo very entrepreneurial as well, which, I mean, your role is an indication of. Do you have any sense of how that became? Did it become out of need? Because it was so exciting to be part of an organization that was really entrepreneurial, because many healthcare organizations are absolutely the opposite of that.
I think that arises out of the structure of the organization and how the time of its clinicians are managed. So all the clinicians in Mayo Clinic are salaried. And it's not the only institution where that's the case, but I think it's fair to say that it's one that has had that practice for the longest duration. One of the side effects of that is that clinicians with ideas can essentially petition for what's called protected time. And what that means is this is time that can be expressly allocated for that physician and other members of the care team to focus on ideas that can move the practice of care forward and free them up from patient care during those windows of time. And that is a really deeply ingrained approach to taking ideas and giving, institutionally allowing really, really bright people with good ideas to see how far those ideas can go. And that's, I think, at the core of that entrepreneurship
that's fabulous.
You noticed.
It's really great.
Yeah, that's very intriguing to hear that. You touched on the one project of yours, but anything else in 2015 that we ought to be keeping an eye on? Any new initiatives?
Specifically for Mayo, you mean, or just in...
Or your department, or Mayo? I mean, I'm just curious, anything we should look
Well,
out
I
for?
Think, you know, I probably go back to the thing that I mentioned earlier. I think one of the reasons why I'm appearing at the event, and Tim and I are, is because the work that we've done to date that has kind of reached a point of not completion, but certainly a point where the potential can be readily understood more broadly. Without getting into all the details of that work, I think there's some potential for genuine transformation. And we're making it a priority to inform people of the work that we've done, as well as identify concrete ways where other like-minded organizations can work with us to further that work.
Well, Joe and I remain optimistic that the healthcare industry is transforming and it's going to transform lives, but we are most grateful for the leadership and the influence that Mayo Clinic does in leading that transformation. So we appreciate your fine work. Keith, before we let you go, how can people get in touch with you and learn more about the work you're doing at Mayo Clinic?
Well, you can feel free to find me on LinkedIn, I guess. And I've got a wide range of interests and wide range of activities that I'm engaged in. So if you've got some great ideas, I'm always open to hearing them.
Outstanding. Keith Toussaint, Executive Director of Collaborative Development for the Mayo Clinic. Keith, it was a real pleasure to have you. Thanks so much for stopping by and joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
All right. Well, that wraps this conversation. Again, on behalf of our guest, Keith Toussaint, my co-host, Joe Lavelle, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you soon on Intrepid Healthcare.